From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Rasha McChesney with this look at the news. The number of Americans with eating disorders has skyrocketed during the pandemic. And as Claire Strimple reports for KTOO, Alaska does not have enough resources to help them.
Jasmine Taylor Bryant says it should have been a red flag when her daughter Willow lost 6 pounds between routine yearly checkups.
And then by March, she had missed a period. And so I was like, nope, you've lost weight. I can see something's going on. Everything around food is stressful. We need to go to the doctor.
It was obvious her daughter was losing too much weight. But the local clinic wanted to run tests and make sure something else wasn't behind Willow's weight loss.
It kind of just got out of control really fast for her, not being able to eat.
By May, Willow was losing a pound or two a week. Taylor Bryant says it took a long time to get an eating disorder diagnosis. There are no treatment centers for eating disorders in Alaska. And for families like theirs, who rely on Medicaid, there's only one option for treatment. It's in Utah. The wait list is 12 weeks long.
And, you know, every week I was just saying, like, we don't have 12 weeks, you know, and then we don't have 11 weeks. Well, we don't have 10 weeks. Like, she's not going to make it at this rate. Like, this is not, you know, this is too much too fast. And she couldn't control it at that point.
Taylor Bryant found another clinic with space for Willow, roughly 3,000 miles away. She declined to share exactly where it is for privacy reasons. Willow's still in treatment there. The family is paying out of pocket. It costs up to $1,800 a day, up front. She estimates the total bill by the time Willow was released in January will be more than $200,000. Taylor Bryant moved into the room above her parents' garage so she could rent her place. Willow's grandmother mortgaged her home. The Haynes community, family, and friends have donated tens of thousands of dollars to save Willow's life. There's only one dietitian in the state certified to work with eating disorders.
We need qualified clinicians. That would at least allow us to do better for an outpatient level of care.
Grace Ray Schumacher noticed that she was seeing a lot of patients with eating disorders when she began work as a dietitian in Palmer. Cases began to ramp up during the pandemic. Schumacher says Alaska's medical facilities aren't set up to handle the volume or the severity.
It was pretty scary. And as a clinician dealing with the liability of having patients in my care who are not necessarily supposed to be cared for at this level of care, it's intimidating.
Schumacher works with out-of-state clinics to get people into care they need. But she says wait times can be really long lately. And some clinics only accept certain populations. The Utah clinic that takes Medicaid only works with female-identifying patients over the age of 13, for example. That leaves a lot of people out.
My son was diagnosed with an eating disorder at the age of 10, about 2 years ago.
Keegan Carroll says doctors in her community didn't really know how to respond and initially brushed off her concerns.
And because we were here in Juneau, there were no resources to help us navigate.
Her son's illness progressed quickly. After 3 months of bouncing around, the family found Schumacher, who ran blood tests. Carol says her son's heart rate dipped into the 30s, a sign that the body is starving.
2 days later, we were on our way to Children's Hospital in Seattle.
It was there that the family finally got an anorexia diagnosis.
I mean, I literally just broke down. And that was probably the hardest moment of my life. And I think because of the uncertainty of what was going to happen and how we were going to treat this. And as a family, what was going to be our future? What was going to be his future?
There was nowhere to continue his care in Juneau. No one specialized in teaching his body to receive food again. Carol quit her job, and her husband took time off from work to treat their son at home. She's turned to advocacy in the wake of her son's illness. She joined the committee of a fledgling nonprofit and is pushing for awareness. Beth Rose began that nonprofit, Alaska Eating Disorders Alliance, 2 years ago with a friend. Both women recovered from eating disorders in their teens and then navigated care with their children.
And we've had people ask us, oh my gosh, where have you been? Because it was great before and it's been even more intense since that time.
She says the stakes couldn't be higher. More people die with eating disorders than any psychiatric illness other than opioid addiction. There aren't many statistics to point to. The Centers for Disease Control stopped formally tracking eating disorders in 2015. Even though nearly 10% of the population will experience an eating disorder in their lifetime.
There's so much shame and stigma around eating disorders.
The National Eating Disorder Association runs a hotline for calls, texts, and chat for people in need. The volume of interactions went up 56% during the pandemic. Back in Haines, Taylor Bryant says her daughter is making progress in the lower 48. On a recent video call, some of Willow's friends passed in the hall.
I could hear just kids like going like, "Hi, Willow's mom." It just reminded me so, like, I know that they're all just a bunch of kids, but like, it was like, oh my God, they're just normal kids that are all scared and all so far away from home.
Local advocates want to bring care like this closer and make it easier to find help at all. In Juneau, I'm Claire Strimple.
Want a receipt for your City of Juneau taxes? There's a new online tool that shows residents just that. As KTOO's Bridget Dowd reports, users will see an estimated breakdown of the programs and services supported by their sales and property taxes.
The tool is run through a site called Balancing Act, and it asks residents to enter their annual income, age, and the assessed value of their home, if they own one. With that information, the site generates an unofficial tax receipt, which shows the estimated amount paid to the school district, police, and other services. Juneau's budget analyst, Adrian Spiegel, says the idea came up when the city of Tacoma posted a video using the same software.
We became aware of that maybe around last January 2021, and have since been sort of working with the assembly on whether they were interested in pursuing this tool and this education mechanism for the public, and they definitely were.
The receipt doesn't include taxes levied on tobacco, liquor, or marijuana sales. It also doesn't include property taxes paid through rental costs. Spiegel says the tool makes city budgeting more transparent.
I believe a lot of members of the community care where those tax dollars are being spent and perhaps haven't historically had an easy way of obtaining this information.
She says the city also hopes having more information will encourage people to weigh in on the budget process.
I think that if, you know, they feel like the priorities that are funded by their taxes maybe aren't the right priorities, they may feel empowered to engage in the public process more during the budget process. Or if they are really excited about what their tax dollars are going towards, that also, I'm hoping, will encourage people to communicate that.
If you'd like to try out the tool, you can find it online on the city's website or at ktoo.org. In Juneau, I'm Bridget Dowd.
Juneau Public Market is back. This year, the event is being held in person November 26th through 28th at Centennial Hall and the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. It's one of the biggest events of the year, where people get their Christmas presents and support artists from throughout the state. About 140 vendors are currently signed up for the market from across Alaska and the West Coast. Last year, the market was online only, and about 35 vendors participated. Organizer Peter Metcalf started planning for an in-person public market earlier this year before the Delta variant of COVID-19 caused a wave of new cases. When city officials raised Juneau's risk level, he needed to adjust the event to meet the city's mitigation strategies. Those rules say that indoor events can have a maximum of 20 people unless everyone is fully vaccinated. So, in order to hold the event in person, everyone is required to be fully vaccinated and wear masks. There are no exceptions to the vaccine requirement, and that means children 11 or younger who are currently ineligible for the vaccine won't be able to go. People can only take their masks off when they're eating food in the food court, and they will have to be socially distanced. Metcalf says,
"This is nothing we've chosen to do. However, we're dedicated to the public health, and we would not hold this event if we thought it could be a mass spreading event of any sort."
To prove vaccination, people can either bring their vaccination cards or have a picture of it on their phone. Metcalf says about a dozen vendors have withdrawn, either because they want to avoid crowds for COVID-19 safety or because they're not vaccinated. There will be people checking vaccination status at the doors of the event and putting wristbands on people. Overall, Metcalf says he is optimistic about the event, and he wants to bring back some celebration of the holidays.
This is a first step in returning to normal, and we hope that the succeeding year, 2022, we'll be able to open all our venues and be back to normal.
To be fully vaccinated before the public market, you'd need to get your single dose or second dose of a vaccine by November 11th. And 21 Republican state attorneys general have sent a letter to President Joe Biden criticizing his COVID-19 vaccination mandate for federal contractors. The letter is signed by attorneys general from Texas, Mississippi, Alaska, and other states, and they say the mandate, quote, stands on shaky legal ground, is confusing to contractors, and could worsen supply chain problems. They wrote that companies could be blacklisted for federal contracts unless they get their workers vaccinated on, quote, an unworkable timeline. Some legal experts say they think the Biden administration is on strong legal footing. Scientists in Homer and Seward have spent the last several decades tracking a population of mammal-eating killer whales called the Chugach transients in the Gulf of Alaska. They're still tracking them as they age and as the pod approaches extinction. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
There used to be 22 whales in that pod, but the year after they swam through the Exxon Valdez oil spill, 9 members died, says Dan Olson, a field biologist with the North Gulf Oceanic Society. Other whales went missing.
And now there are 7 of them remaining.
This summer, researchers were waiting for a glimpse of the 7th transient, a 46-year-old lone male.
It wasn't until late in the season that one of the local tour captains here in Seward sent us a photograph, and we were able to confirm that this male was still alive. He's 46 years old now, so we may not have him much longer. Males often live 45 to 50 years old. And so we, every year that goes by, we're still crossing our fingers that he's still alive.
The North Gulf Oceanic Society identifies the transients photographically. It also tracks them acoustically, since pods have distinct calls. Olson recorded that lone male's call in 2019. He says the distinct call is one he's hearing less and less as the population of whales dwindles. The Chugach transients have not had a calf since the oil spill, over 30 years ago. Olson says scientists aren't exactly sure why. Other populations of killer whales are doing well, but the two pods that swam through the spill are not.
It's difficult to know why if the oil spill reduced their prey abundance such that they weren't able to have enough nutrition to continue to have offspring, or if the contaminants directly affected their reproductive systems. But regardless, we are seeing a population that is going extinct.
He says the population is genetically distinct, so if they lose that population, they'll lose a source of biological diversity. Olson says it's important to keep tracking the whales because it helps scientists track the entire ecosystem.
Killer whales are an apex predator and often are indicators of the health of the entire ecosystem, and changes in their population, changes in their body condition, their body health can help alert us to issues that we're seeing in the ecosystems.
The North Gulf Oceanic Society has been around since the 80s and is based in Homer. For years, it's relied on funding from the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council, the group tasked with spending the civil settlement from the Exxon Valdez oil spill. This year, Olson says, the council decided it will not be funding the group's research going forward. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
State health officials reported 16 new cases of COVID-19 among Juneau residents on Wednesday. Juneau Public Health reported there were about 140 people with active cases of COVID-19 in Juneau. More than half of those cases are people who are 18 years old or younger. 5 people with active cases of COVID-19 are currently being treated at Bartlett Regional Hospital. The Juneau School District reported 5 people who tested positive for COVID-19 and were contagious while at school. That includes 2 from Sit-Iti Shanach Glacier Valley School. Some close contacts in 2 classes were quarantined, 1 each at Thunder Mountain High School, Zontikahini Middle School, and Floyd Dryden Middle School. No classes at any of those schools have been quarantined as a result. Statewide, another 567 new cases were reported, and 2 more people have died. That is the latest from the KTOO Newsroom. I'm Rasha McChesney.